This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, what is going to happen tonight as UConn and San Diego State play for the national championship in Houston? Really glad that I got to spend the week in Houston. It was great to see and work directly with you, Ron, face-to-face for the almost the entire week.
You see, now everyone knows you're lying.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, yeah, all right. had a good night Saturday at Energy Stadium. A couple of observations. One, listen, I'm not a big fan of football stadiums with these basketball courts, but seeing it in person sort of changed it a little. I still think it's not the right venue, but I understand why they do it. I mean, that place was packed, and you want to put as many people in that place as possible. I honestly do not know how people in the upper deck at Energy Stadium saw anything other than just watching it on a big TV screen. But there is something about when that place got loud, when Lamont Butler hit that shot, there is something pretty awesome about it. It was really remarkable. But the one thing is, I've covered games at basketball arenas where to get from point A to point B is rather easy. Like if you're going back and forth, SEC tournament, for example, there's like four games on a Thursday. And if you're going back and forth to your work area, to the game, back to your work area, cutting up audio or writing stuff, it makes it it's such an easier run. But this football stadium is gigantic, and no matter what exit I seemed to leave, I couldn't get to the media center. I felt like I was walking, oh God, might as well, like get my Sherpa as I walk through the bowels of the stadium inside the to get to the media center. But nevertheless, the atmosphere was fantastic. It was electric. Two games on Saturday, one where it came down to the wire, and one was one that never got really that close. Miami made a run in the second half and never got close. So now we have tonight's game between a San Diego State team that, for the life of me, I could not understand how in the world they came back in that game against Florida Atlantic when they were down by 14 points. And I remember saying to you at one point in the game, I said, you know what's dangerous about this is that Florida Atlantic already has, with 11 minutes to go, they have the points that San Diego State keeps opponents down to. And I was like, if Florida Atlantic keeps scoring, and then they just started, they slowed down. They didn't score as much. They couldn't get the offensive rebounds. And Florida Atlantic couldn't get stops, and San Diego State kept coming back. But the big moment of the game was when Florida Atlantic had the ball and they were up by one, and they were trying to get to get up by three, get a bucket, use as much time on the clock as possible. San Diego State gets the stop. And then there are no timeouts. He has timeouts. Brian Dutcher has timeouts, and he doesn't take them. And here's why people were surprised he didn't take them. Because all he had on the court at the time was big men and one guard, and that was Lamont Butler. And Butler has the ball, and he takes it down, and he's in transition, but Florida Atlantic was right there with them, and they're actually playing pretty good defense. And Butler goes down to the baseline, and he almost goes out of bounds, and then he comes back out, and he's dribbling, 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 and I'm going, you got to shoot this. Like, there's like no even Jim Nantz said, he's got to put it up. I mean, he looked like he didn't know the time. He was like trying to coordinate something, but he did know the time. And he knew where he was, and finally launches it up and knocks it down. And this is something I didn't know. I'm going to credit the Ringer. One, it was the first true buzzer beater of this year's tournament. The Gonzaga shot came with a few ticks on the clock. But the second thing was, it's the first buzzer beater in a Final Four that flipped the game from a loss to a win. Now, I thought that was wrong because I thought Jalen Suggs' shot went in at the buzzer, but they pointed out, no, even Jalen Suggs' shot from 2 years ago at the Final Four had a couple of ticks left on the clock. This and also Chris Jenkins' shot, I remember Chris Jenkins' shot, but that was not to flip the game from a loss to a win. That flipped a tie game to a win. So Jenkins hit the shot at 74 all. So Lamont Butler hits a true buzzer beater, and it was clear as soon as he released it that he had plenty of time, that the ball was in the air as the buzzer went, you know, as the lights came on behind the backboard. And it sunk the heart of Florida Atlantic. And I was telling you, Ron, I don't usually feel bad for teams. Like, I don't have sympathy. It's like, you know, I don't know if I've gotten more cynical as I've gotten older, but especially in a game if I don't have a dog in the fight, because I want to celebrate a comeback and I don't want to be disheartened by a loss. But I felt bad for Florida Atlantic.
You had to.
I really did.
You couldn't help it.
They were up by 14.
I mean, you and I, we were sitting behind
right.
them.
Yep.
And it was... God, I felt terrible. You know, you just saw it like they were jumping up and down. They were cheering. They were that way all game long. They were having the time of their lives. And what was it? It was like out of 40 minutes of basketball, they led 32 minutes of it.
Yeah, they were right. They had led 32 minutes in the game. San Diego State had an early lead. And then Florida Atlantic chipped away at that, got the lead, and then didn't give it up until Lamont Butler hit his shot. I mean, again, they were up by 14 points, and San Diego State in the second half had to chip it away at it. And here's why I felt bad for them, because, again, we're right there with the Florida Atlantic kids, and they're all losing their minds. Every play, they're losing their minds, and it's great. But when you see a North Carolina lose to Villanova in 2016 – North Carolina won the championship the very next year, right? Now, I'm not saying that happens all the time, but I'm not going to have sympathy for Roy Williams in North Carolina losing at a buzzer in a championship game. I'm not, my sympathies don't go that far for a school that is capable of winning a championship any given year in any given tournament. But at the same, in this situation, I'm thinking, when is this school ever going to be here again? There is no guarantees, especially in this tournament. But when are they going to be at this moment again?
I mean, you can almost guarantee that they are not.
They are not, right? You could. I mean, if you told me you'll never see Florida Atlantic in the Finals Four again, I would be, yeah, that's kind of how this works, isn't it? I mean, maybe Dusty may build something in the few years on his extension. But we already know how tough this is, so guaranteeing anybody a Final Four trip is nearly impossible. So I'm thinking these kids, they're not going to see it next year. They're probably not going to see it maybe for the rest of their lives, maybe in the next 20 years. I don't know. But it's more likely that you won't see them than you will see them. So that's probably where my sympathies lie, because to be that euphoric – up 14 in the second half, you're dreaming, you're one Monday night, all this, you start thinking, and it's gone. And next thing you know, you find yourself in a tight game, you find yourself holding on, now you're holding your breath, and now you have to let the breath out because you lost. And for San Diego State, never in it, all right, slowly getting in it, out we want it. And it was great. And then UConn and Miami, just because the NCAA tends to do this, they went, yeah, relax. This one's easy. If you want to go get some souvenirs, you want to go get some popcorn, don't worry. We got a double-digit lead. We're not going to let this one go. So don't worry about it. If you got to go make a phone call in the concourse, go make it, because Miami ain't coming back in this one. And UConn has won all of their games in this tournament by double digits, all of them by double digits. And remember, they're a four seed, an underseeded four seed. Because they were really good at 14-0 to start the season, had a January lull, a lot of it when Dan Hurley got COVID. And they ended up not winning the Big East. That was Marquette and all that. But they were strong. They're deep. They're strong. They got all the guys on the court can score. And they're pretty good defensively. San Diego State's calling card is their defense, but they're like we've said this all the previews leading up to this. They have players that are built like football players, like safeties, defensive backs that can run big, strong. But UConn's defense is outstanding too. Sanogo will swat that thing away in the paint. They've got good guards that will trap you. But tonight's going to be really interesting. I don't want to make an over comparison here, because this is not as similar like Villanova versus Georgetown in 85, because Villanova had played Georgetown a number of times. Villanova was an 8 seed. San Diego State's a 5 seed. Georgetown was number 1. UConn is a 4. But the reality of it is there has to be a similar effort on San Diego's part. They're going to have to do something really remarkable to catch a UConn team that's rolling right now. Again, every opponent they've played, they have beaten comfortably. They have not been in a tight game all tournament. Now, that's what, you know, the narrative in 1985 was, is as Villanova was hitting all their shots, and they shot 77% from the game, which is remarkable. That made Georgetown go, okay, we're not putting, like, no matter what we do, we're not putting this team away. We do something, they just answer. We do something, they answer. So San Diego State's going to have to be on their game offensively. Defensively, you can still do things against UConn to trap them, but they'll find some ways. Their set plays are the best. They're best. And so tonight it's not this even matchup. I don't think a lot of people are seeing it as an even matchup, despite the seeding maybe indicating that it is. But San Diego State is going to, they might have to do something spectacular. So tomorrow morning when we hit the show and if they win tonight, we might be saying, oh, and this was, they did this, this blew us away in the stat box. All right, we'll talk more about the Final Four, but I want to get to the women's championship game last night, and not so much what happened on the court, but my God, is social media exploding on Angel Reese, and everybody is wondering if she did something classless. Well, we'll talk about that next. Coming up at Sports Map Radio, again, on the eve of tonight's men's Final Four.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, men's championship tonight. Women's championship was yesterday. But I was traveling yesterday, and I was exhausted, and I got home. My daughter and my wife are in Europe on a school trip, so I have the house to myself. So I got to the airport. I got my car and went home. I was exhausted, but I did wake up and I said, oh, look at that. The women's championship game's on. So I watched most of it and I just watched LSU kill Iowa. Now we were at the Gal media party Friday night. And so I missed South Carolina, Iowa in the Final Four in Dallas. Now the women are the defending national champs. They were 36-0 going into the game. I did catch the final minute, but that was nothing. And Caitlin Clark scored 41 points, beat the Gamecocks, gave them their first loss. But here's the thing with Iowa, and I hate to use an old cliche, but I'll use it. They couldn't beat Finland. They couldn't beat Finland. That was basically how it works. Your gold medal game can't be the semifinals. It has to be the gold medal game, right? You know, the U.S. hockey team had to beat Finland, and Iowa couldn't beat Finland. They beat LSU. They lost to LSU. They got killed, absolutely killed. The officiating wasn't good. I wasn't as outraged about it as so many people. Like, people on Twitter would lose, because people on Twitter lose their mind over everything. But what they really lost their mind with was Angel Reese, the LSU player, who went up to Caitlin Clark multiple times to try to get her attention, to wave her hand in her face like Caitlin Clark did in her game before they played LSU. And everyone says this is classless. They didn't say anything when Caitlin Clark did it, but people are making a clarification. They're saying, well, here's the thing. Caitlin Clark hits a shot. She waves a hand on her face. She's doing it as a reaction to it. What Angel Reese did was she went right up to her. Like, instead of doing it after she did something, she just went up to her and did it. Like, the straight up taunting. Taunting for taunting's sake, not a reaction. To me, I think it's kind of splitting hairs a little bit. I mean, if you're not going to react to Caitlin Clark, you have no business reacting to Angel Reese. I'm sorry. I think I know it's two different circumstances, but slow down a little bit. All right, slow down, because trash talking is done. Those who do it get it back, and I think that seems to. Caitlin Clark was like, nah, I don't care. I don't care. Good. That's the way you could. You should. And the coach at Iowa, she made a point saying, you know what? She's proud of her accomplishment. Talking about Angel Reese. She's proud of what she did. She won a national championship. Good for her. I handle things. We're two different people and I can't control it. So I have nothing, you know, nothing to say on it. She wasn't outraged by it. It's just a thing. We are at a point now where we are so sensitive to stuff, but we have an outlet for outrage, right? When before you would just kind of say, oh, I don't like that or I don't like this. Now there's a place to go, but there's also a place to go to get people to react to your reaction. And I think that's where Twitter and social media get its biggest power. Is that if you see something you don't like, you now have a way to go do it. Lord knows I've done it in a number of sporting events, but it is also taking maybe a thing that's like a 4 and elevating it to a 10, because why not elevate it to a 10? You live in a world of 10s and 11s and 12s on the meter, right? Why not, right? That old Spinal Tap cliche, right? Go to 11. Everybody wants to go to 11. They want to go to 11 with everything. They want to go to 11 in politics. They want to go to 11 in sports. They want to go to 11 on movies and actors and news and gossip. Everything's turned up, right? 20 years ago, this would have been nothing. This would have been, oh, look at that, whatever. But because now it's like I am personally offended. Like I'm shaking, visibly shaking. Because Angel Reese waved her hands in the face of the best basketball player. But here's, I think this is why people were upset. And I really, this is my theory. I just think that every now and then, especially in a sport that continues to strive to get respect. I mean, look, they had a packed house in Dallas. They had fantastic television ratings, all of those things. But there are still people pushing and pushing and pushing for even more exposure in women's basketball, right? And having a daughter that played basketball, like, I like talking to my daughter about it. She knows all these players, you know, she follows it, whatnot. But the reality is there's still people that are saying it's not on the same level it needs to be. It needs to be even more exposed. And why are they doing this? And the women get screwed over here because they have to play in this. All of these things. The tournament has gotten much, much better for women's basketball than it was when I was in school. And now you have a player in Caitlin Clark, right? And everybody wants to celebrate her as not only a women's basketball player, but a basketball player, right? Right? She's putting on the best show of anybody, man or woman, in the tournament, right? She has 41 points against South Carolina. They knock off the mighty Gamecocks. And the national media wants to take this young woman, elevate her even higher than they were elevating her all season. She was the player of the year. Like, she didn't come out of nowhere. She didn't have a magical tournament after being a role player at Iowa. Like, she's a major star. She's a major college basketball star. So now she's done this thing, like she said, like she beat the Soviets, quote unquote. She did this incredible thing. She beat an undefeated basketball team, a nearly perfect basketball team in terms of all the metrics that you can have, and perfect in their record. She beats them. It's this elevation, right? You hear people talking as soon as it happened about her place in the game, right? Is she a better basketball player in what she is in as Zach Edey was on the men's side? Both were players of the year, right? Is she better in the women's game as Zach Edey is in the men's game? And the men's game has a number of great players. She's separating herself from everybody in women's basketball. Everyone was talking about she might have had the best tournament of any college player of all time. Men or woman. Okay, so then this happens, right? And the narrative is brought down. She had 30 points, but Iowa didn't win. Not only did Iowa not win, LSU scored over 100 points in a college basketball game. They scored over 100 points and shattered the championship point record. And not only did they score over 100 points, they dominated the game and Iowa was not in it. So here's where I think people's moral outrage was when Angel Reese waved her hand in front of her face at Caitlin Clark, is that the elevation of Caitlin Clark gets stained because one of this loss, she could carry a team to beat South Carolina, the number one team in the country, but she couldn't carry them to beat LSU. And two, it sort of goes, yeah, our new hero is there. I need to find the villain, right? I need a Lex Luthor here. I need a Joker. I need a villain. I need a Green Goblin. I need whatever superhero analogy you want to make. I need a Thanos. I mean, list them all, comic book people. But that's what people look for. I can't have a superhero without a villain, so where's my villain? My superhero is down. Right? Kryptonite is in Superman's hands. Where is the villain in this? Is it really Angel Reese? Maybe they get along. Maybe they don't get along. I don't know. Maybe she saw what Caitlin Clark did and said, you know what? If I get a chance to do that to her, I'm going to do that to her. And she did. Right? But I think that's where the national media, I mean, everybody was like, this is classless. This is terrible. I mean, I didn't think it was anything more than young people doing what young people do in athletic situations sometimes. But I also think that Angel Reese was answering a moment that Caitlin Clark did, and everyone seemed to think it was awesome, and nobody seemed to have a problem with it, and said, all right, let's see what happens when I do it. See what the reaction is when I pull this off. And I think that's where that came from. Look, as I said earlier, the women's basketball game, and many of you who have followed maybe a UConn program or a Tennessee program in the 90s when they were pretty much it, right? And every now and then maybe like a Notre Dame would pop up or a Stanford would pop up. But those were the two big programs. You know how from the highest level down to the bottom, it's a pretty steep step, right? And now it's a little bit more diverse with good teams around the country. It's gotten a lot better. Their tournament used to be kind of considered an afterthought. To be honest with you, it was kind of disrespected for a long time. Now it's got the level of respect. They used to play back-to-back games. They used to have their Final Four, and then they would play the next day just to squeeze it in before all the attention were on the men. But then they finally said, well, that's not really fair. Let's give them 2 days. So they've staggered this. They used to play, if I'm not mistaken, they used to play on Tuesday. There was a period of time where they played on Tuesday. Now they do their Final Four on Friday, Sunday. The men do it Saturday, Monday. It was, you know, full house. Fans did pour in. Fans did show up. They were treated to a good Final Four. But I think everybody needs to slow down on the social media outrage. But that's like saying, stop the rushing water from the dam with maybe some potato sacks. I mean, it's not going to happen. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. I will say this about the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark controversy that everybody seemed to be up in arms about. Nancy Armour made this point in USA Today, which I agree with. It's good to see if you are a proponent of the women's game, meaning you're trying to promote it, trying to get it into the national. It's you're very glad that something this petty is getting people worked up, because in the old days there would have just been a 102-85 box score and that's about it. And they'll be like, LSU wins their first ever women's national championship. So-and-so scored this many points. So-and-so scored this many points. And that would be it. And now people are like worked up over something in a women's game. That's at least, I guess, progress. Somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I actually had to think about this, that I think it was Seth Davis pointed out that Temple, who's looking for a basketball coach, or maybe they're not now, maybe at the time of the tweet, I don't know. But Temple should hire Dawn Staley, the women's basketball coach at South Carolina. And then the response was, why would she leave as the top dog of the women's game for a lousy men's job? Like, I know that there's a breaking barrier thing, but didn't Gino Auriemma go through this for years and years and years?
And years and years.
Where he would be chased by men's programs, and he'd like, every year I'm playing for a national championship. Why would I go to a men's program and spend years and years and years building that up when every year I'm competing for a championship here? And Dawn Staley could say the same thing. She's like, wait a minute, hold on. I play in front of a packed house. We go to the tournament every year. I get the strongest recruits in the country. We're on national TV. Why would I go be the head coach at Temple? Like, why would I take a... Why are you saying that a lowly men's job, a job in the men's basketball that's on a lower level, why was it better for me professionally than being the top team in women's college basketball? That's a good question. Because a lot of people were surprised that Gino Auriemma never used it to springboard to get. Yeah, but you know, you'd look at the Final Four and you'd go, "Don't you want to do this?" Like, look at your Final Four. Look at this was in the 90s. Look at that. Look what you're doing. You're beating teams by 75 points. Don't you want to play over here? Look at this. They're playing in domes, football stadiums. Don't you want to do this? He was like, "No, I don't. I don't want that grind of building. They built it here. I built this here into a national power." And I don't. I think there will be eventually somebody is going to hire a woman to be a men's head coach in college basketball. But if you're the number one team in the country, I don't know if you'd leave that job to go do that, because you could disappear pretty quickly. You could not necessarily. You'd still be the story of like the first woman to coach a men's team, etc. But after a while, you could be like, wow, you know, look at this. March Madness is happening and I'm not a part of it. But nevertheless, it's one of those stories that went beyond just the game and the box score. And I think if you're women's basketball, that's probably good. It's probably good. It couldn't have happened 20 years ago because of social media. But now with social media, that's what, like, people on Facebook who never comment on basketball are posting this. My friends who are like, you haven't posted one thing about the men's tournament or the women's tournament, and now you're morally outraged by this? Are you just catching the... Did you even watch it in real time? I doubt you watched it in real time. You probably just saw it and said, nah, you know what? I'm mad about this. I'll be mad about this like everybody else is mad about this, which is half of the social media battle anyway. All right, so for tonight, the men's game, again, UConn and San Diego State. So yesterday, I was flying home, and I had a very early flight, and I got to the airport. My Uber picked me up, went to the airport, and I didn't know. Remember when I told you when I flew from Nashville to Houston, when the flight was empty? I had a whole row to myself. I did not know if the flight was going to be packed or not. But as soon as I got down to the gate, I realized, this is going to be full. So they said right off the bat, this is a full flight. Take a seat, but somebody's sitting next to you. So don't be putting your stuff on the seat. Don't be putting your hat down, trying to be like somebody's got this seat. You ain't getting the row to yourself. So I found a seat, sat down. This young woman, she sat down, and we got to talking, and she was telling me that her and her boyfriend were going on a cruise. And they had booked this cruise. Now, I have no idea why they didn't book, didn't have a reservation, but she said her and her boyfriend were on standby. And they were trying to get to Miami. And she was on her phone before we took off, looking up flights from Nashville to Miami, trying to see what was available. We got up in the air. She bought the internet package. She was still doing that. She was, you know, she lands. She was making a phone call to the ship. She was trying to figure out what time the ship was leaving. Like, what time is the last possible time me and my boyfriend can get on this boat? And so I told her, she goes, I don't understand. She goes, I cannot understand why we could not get a flight. None of the flights to Miami were open. None. No, not Delta, not United, no flights to Miami. And I was like, yeah, they had two teams lose Saturday in the Final Four. She's like, what? I go, yeah, Miami and Florida Atlantic. They're in Boca. They both lost Saturday night. And she's like, oh, and I tried to explain to her, see, a lot of people come to these things and they buy the ticket, but then if the team wins, they'll make arrangements to stay, right? They'll make a little more, but sometimes they'll just go, screw it, I'm leaving, I'm done. So these teams and their fan bases, they ain't going to stick around 2 days to watch two teams they don't care about. They're heading back home, so they gobbled up all the flights.
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, and I said, and they probably did it the second the buzzer sounded. So, because she was trying to do it today. Now, I have no idea.
You know what? Miami fans are probably doing it 5 minutes left.
Miami
in the game.
Fans, yeah. Where's the flight? Yeah, I got that one. We're good. Tomorrow morning, we're out of here. Exactly. But I have no idea why she and her boyfriend didn't have a reservation, didn't book it like they booked the cruise. Why didn't they book the flight? But yeah. Then I was thinking, is there a thing with young people now where they're like, oh, no, there's like There's like five secret sites you can go to where you can get tickets for nothing at the last minute.
Probably.
Is that because I don't know? I never know these things.
I mean, I have heard. I've heard a couple of different things. If you book your tickets way, way, way in advance, obviously you get the best price.
Right.
I've also heard that if you book like, you know, day of, you're probably going to end up getting a good price because they just want to get rid of that
seat. They want to get rid of the seats, right.
Then the other thing I've heard was that if you have searched a flight, put in all the information, you're like, I didn't like that price. The website that you went to stores your IP address.
Oh, okay.
And so it'll always show a little bit more, an uptick more. So, like, you know, for instance, if you were looking for a flight, you know, yesterday you were researching flight for Houston to Nashville, right, or Nashville to Houston, a round trip.
Right.
And you looked one day, and you're like, all right, well, it's this price. You know what? Let me think about this. Let me check other airlines. But then you went back to the original website you went to. It might show a little bit more because it remembered you.
Oh,
I don't know
okay.
if that's true.
Yeah. Well,
but I do think that. I mean, obviously, if you book way in advance, it's going to be cheaper. And I have heard that if you book day of, it's like a hotel room, that if you book a hotel room day of, or you go in there and say, what's the best price? They'll give you a really great deal because they don't want an empty room.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was wondering if they're for her. So when we landed, as I was getting off the plane with her, she met up with her boyfriend at the gate as we were exiting the plane. And as we were walking, you know, they were going, she was telling them everything that she did. She's like, well, I checked United. I checked this. I said, there's a flight here. I also called the cruise line. And I thought to myself, dude, that is your next 35 years of life if you marry this young girl. That's it right there. What you're seeing right now, that's how your life is going to be. If she's a go-getter like that, you will not be allowed to do anything in terms of travel planning for the rest of your life. My wife runs the show 100% when we travel. 100%. I've tried to jump in with, do you want me to call? No. You want me to call the? No. I'll call the hotel. No, I got it. She runs the show. I said, that girl is just like my wife. She's running your show. You just sit back and enjoy. You just go where she tells you to.
You be the Sherpa.
You're the Sherpa. You're carrying her bag. You're pulling her suitcase while she's typing on the phone. That's how that works. If you married somebody just like my wife, I saw it 100 miles away. I said, good for you. You're gonna be like the kids. My wife will come. She'll leave to go talk to some people. She comes back. I'm as giddy as the children were trying to figure out what we're doing next. Sometimes it's like, all right, I got this and I got this and we're doing this. Okay, okay, great, that's fine. But yeah, my, pay attention to sports in your town, kids. And you may not know it, that the final. She didn't even know the Final Four was going on in Houston. She's like, I said, where are you from? She goes, Houston. Okay, yeah, the Final Four. She goes, what's that? I go, the basketball. Even if you don't know anything about college basketball, how did you not know the Final Four was in your town? Something big was in your town. All right, nevertheless, still, championship game tonight. We'll continue with Wake Up Call. Sports Map.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter, before his wife passed last year. Sorry to hear that, Philip. She had the trip while routed and planned before I had a chance to log onto the site to even look at the reservations. I know. My dad was pretty good at trips. I think he ran most of the trips when I was a kid growing up. But my wife has handled every trip we've taken for 25 years. She's got it. My wife does this thing where, and I always tease her about it, and I've teased her about it for a long time. When they go on a trip, she has a list. She goes on the computer. She has an Excel sheet. She writes out a list of everything she needs to pack. And then she prints it out, and then she checks it off as she goes. She does all of that. Me, I throw stuff in a bag, and that's it. And if I forget it, I buy it. Like if I'm on a trip and I go, that I packed myself, which is rare, but if I do, and I go, oh, shoot, I forgot toothpaste. I'll just run to the find of Walgreens or CVS and it's toothpaste. Or I'll go to the hotel. I'm like, do you have one of those kits? Oh, sure, here you go. I go, okay, I got toothpaste. I have no problems either using hotel soap or shampoo. I have no problems with that. I know some people have to bring their own shampoo and conditioner. I just use whatever the hotel has sometimes. I'll use that little bar of soap, too. I don't have a problem with that.
Yep.
My wife will bring all sorts of things. She's got a toiletry bag, huge, filled with stuff. I go, why? I don't like that stuff.
Nah, the only thing I bring, for me, it's a toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant.
Yeah, that's it.
That I need that.
That's pretty
the rest
much
of
it.
Stuff, I, you know, whatever's in there, that's fine with me.
Throw it all together.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, nevertheless, all right, final championship tonight. The if you're a numbers person, the betting odds have gone up for UConn. Now they're favored by 7.5. They're getting a lot of money. They were getting a lot of money at 5.5. Now that's up to 7.5. Is anybody, thinking San Diego State has got a chance tonight, or is everybody thinking this is going to be another double-digit roll for UConn? I don't know. San Diego State, they're a tough team.
They are.
And they made it this far. But we thinking UConn's going to win by double digits again? Yeah, well, I guess. Miami was supposed to give them fits, and Miami didn't give them fits. They were supposed to get fits from, pretty much everybody along the way, and they beat everybody along the way pretty handedly.
No, in fact, we were watching that game, and I think Miami brought it within single digits. I remember you calling it out. I was like, oh, it's single digits now.
Yeah.
And that was, but yeah, it was
go,
nine.
Here you go. Yep. It was nine.
It was nine.
That was it.
That was close as they got.
And UConn was like, that's enough.
But it was almost as if UConn was taking a break on the court.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, we're just getting our breather.
I don't know. I keep going back. I want to see. I don't think this is a David versus Goliath thing. San Diego State's been for real for a couple years now.
Yeah.
This is not that. This is not a massive underdog. I think we felt that way about Butler. Remember when Butler went to the finals,
yeah,
the first one? They went to the play-in game. And then, I think when Butler played UConn for the first time. No, Butler played Duke the first time. Sorry, Butler played Duke the first time. I think there was a feeling like that. Like, hey, well. But I don't think it's that. But the domination of UConn has been real. I mean, they just got so many ways to beat you. That's the thing. You want to get down to Sanogo, you can do that. You want to kick it out to Hawkins and have him hit a three? Sure, why not? They got so many different ways and so many different designs. But here's the thing. Where UConn is really good is in transition. They're one of the best transition basketball teams out there. But San Diego State can guard transition pretty well, especially if they've got, obviously you'll need speedy guards to get up and down, but they're pretty good at that. And I'm interested to see, again, how San Diego State, how defensively they find a way to stop five guys. Because if all five guys, there isn't just two guys that can beat you. It's if all five guys can beat you. So it should be that. But if UConn wins this one, again, if they win again, they are one of those teams. You go back to the 99, was it 99 they won, 2004 they won, 2011 they won, 2014 they won. Now they just pop up. And every now and then they come up and win a championship. And sometimes you kind of forget that they did win a championship in a particular year. 2004, they won in San Antonio. So they've been winning championships. Again, they win, they kind of disappear, then they come back again and they win again every couple of years. And here's UConn again. And they're about ready to win. If they win tonight, they'll win their third national championship within a 24-year span with three different head coaches. Now, I'm sorry, but that is, to me, that's a definition of a solid program, right? I mean, that's a blue blood, if you will, where your program can withstand coaching changes. Your program can continue on and find success again, even when you dip, even when you have a coach that's get leaves or gets fired and you take the program takes a few years to come back from that, but they're right back at it. I mean, Dan Hurley is taking a familiar program to the mountaintop again, right? Well, we'll see if that happens at Duke, right? We saw it happen in North Carolina with Roy Williams. We'll see if it happens at Duke. And we'll see if, we saw Larry Brown win at Kansas. We saw Bill Self win at Kansas twice. So, there are programs, Kentucky, John Calipari won, Tubby Smith won, Rick Pitino won before, within the last 25 years. There are these kind of programs that their name is synonymous with success, and they can draw in players regardless of who's the head coach. And some programs have success with a guy, and then he leaves, and that's it. You don't hear from him again. But in San Diego State's case, Steve Fisher, the architect of this team, he never saw this team get to the Final Four. He never saw this team really go deep to like the Elite Eight. But he always had a program that was building something, getting more respect among recruits, good place to visit, good place to play, good city. And Brian Dutcher has carried it from 2017 to a point where, as we heard last week, 2020, they were such a good basketball team, and unfortunately there wasn't an NCAA tournament to showcase that time. They were one of those teams, but as we were getting ready for conference week before COVID hit, all right, look at this, San Diego State out in the Mountain West, really strong basketball team, good players, good resume. That's a team to keep an eye on in the tournament. Well, there was no tournament, so we never got to see how that team would have played out. And now we are. Now, 2 years later, 3 years later, I should say, 3 years later, we've got the team that found its way to navigate it through the tournament and navigated its way in the semifinal game on Saturday night against a Florida Atlantic team, which, by the way, deserves a ton of respect. I know they earned it by getting to the Final Four and all that, but I know there was still a little, people were saying, oh, again, is it about blue bloods or is it about new bloods, right? And all that big debate. But Dusty May and that Florida Atlantic team, they did not bow down to San Diego State. They did not succumb to the defense. They found ways to score. They had that lead of that game, up 14, just couldn't close the deal. And I'll tell you, Ron, afterwards, Dusty May and that team handled it with class. I mean, reading all the post-game quotes and whatnot, they handled it with class. They talked about the journey. They talked how excited they were to be at that journey. Devastated, no doubt, but won with a lot of class, because that was heartbreaking. Because it's, as I said earlier, it wasn't a game that was tied that they lost at the buzzer. They were winning. They make a stop, they win. They win. There's no overtime to play for, and then we'll see in the next, we'll see in five extra minutes. There was, we missed the shot, but we still have a one-point lead. Let's get back and defend. And if we can defend, then we win this basketball game. And Lamont Butler, when you watch the video again, Lamont Butler's foot is so close to out of bounds as he's down by the baseline. It's incredible. It is really, really close.
Can you imagine if that's how the game ended?
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if his toe slides into the out of bounds and they blow that whistle and it's FAU basketball? Oh, boy. But I didn't think he was going to get a shot off, man. I, honest to God, I thought the ball was going to stay in his hands, and or he was just going to fling it up with some off-balanced shot.
He had it all planned
all
out.
All planned out.
All according to plan for him.
I was getting all like panicky. I was like, oh, my God, shoot it.
No,
what are you doing? Shoot it.
I have it on video.
Yeah,
I took video of it, and I could clearly hear a certain someone said, he's got to shoot.
He's dribbling, and the clock is like, it's down to like 2 seconds, and he's dribbling. I'm like, and the defender is on top of him. And I was thinking, oh, my God, he's not going to make it. Or he's going to throw up such a crappy shot that had no chance the moment it left his hands. And then swish. And then pure eruption. That was pretty wild. That was one of the best environments. Even in the hallway, remember we left to go to the interview room and whatnot? Just people in the hallway were just going, oh my gosh. And I made that point to you again. We've seen buzzer beaters plenty of times in our lives, and yet every one of them, because of the uniqueness of it and the circumstance of it, every one of them still makes us go, wow, phenomenal, amazing, like we've seen it for the first time. And Lamont Butler's was. But UConn and their domination of Miami has many people just riding the Huskies tonight. We'll continue hour two, good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll continue our coverage of the Final Four, the championship game tonight. And we've got some other bits of the news because it's Masters Week in golf. That's coming up.